Thank you for joining us for another podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California.
Hello, and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Eric Siegel, chairman of the club's Personal Growth Forum, and your chair for today. We also welcome our listening audience, and we invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. Our speaker is Rachel O'Mara, who is going to talk to us about how to take a break for a minute or a month that actually works. Just a few years ago, Rachel was working at Google on a job that was the envy of all her friends, but as she says in her new best-selling book, Pause, she was beyond miserable and was, quote, the definition of a corporate burnout, unquote. She started getting negative performance reviews, and her five-year relationship with her boyfriend was coming apart. She was in a self-inflicted downward spiral, unmotivated and uncommitted, directionless and despairing, drowning and panicking. So at her request, Google gave her a 90-day unpaid leave, and Rachel's adventure began. Now, Rachel was a woman who had spent her life achieving. She had worked in a tech startup in New York while concurrently winning national rowing championships. She'd gotten an MBA. She had a great job at Google. She dreaded the idea of spending an unpaid 90 days and ending up in the same miserable place where she started. So she therefore plunged into researching and planning, and the result was both a transformation in her life and a deep understanding of how a pause in life, even if it's only a few minutes per day, can provide great benefits. Fortunately for us, Rachel not only returned to Google in a new, improved position, she also wrote up her findings in a book that describes a clear, extremely detailed plan for how to take pauses and restore your sense of balance in the world, your courage to take risk, and maybe even find a more fulfilling job and path in life. That's why she's been featured in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and the Harvard Business Review, among others. That's a basis for her work as a transformational coach, and that's what she's going to discuss with us today. We will, as usual, have a question and answer period at the end of the talk, which I know will be highly useful. So it is now my pleasure to ask you to join me in welcoming to the Commonwealth Club of California our speaker, Rachel O'Mara.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. Great to be here today. How's everyone doing? Great. Give me one second here so we can get the slides back. Great. Well, it's really exciting to be here. I actually still work at Google. I'm literally two blocks away. So when I was given the invitation to come speak here, it was like so excited because I was so close and I live right here in San Francisco. So I'm really thrilled to be here. And I know this just opened up as a space. Very exciting. So Eric, thank you for that introduction. I think you learned a little bit about me. And for myself, part of my journey, and we'll talk a lot about this today, is that I actually now study emotional and social intelligence as a curriculum out of Chicago at a place called the Wright Foundation. So a lot of what I learned post-pause, which was 4 years ago, is stemmed from about six different disciplines that are combined into the world that I study, which is things like emotional intelligence, but also Adlerian psychology, educational theory, developmental psychology, neuroscience, and educational theory. I'm like, there's six of them. I always forget one. So I'm really excited to share some of that today and what I've been learning. But first, what I want to do is really get you engaged. I think pausing to me is about how to shift behavior. So go ahead and pick a buddy, someone who you're next to, or maybe someone new who you haven't talked to, and introduce yourself. I'll give you 2 minutes to do this, so 1 minute each. But go ahead and share what brought you to this talk, what you want to get out of it, and what are some goals that you'd want to get out of today? So go ahead and first person, you can start talking. Great, so thanks. That was a little bit of what I call accelerated learning, and we are, when we're engaging to talk and speak about what's going on, we're actually more engaged to learn and grow, which is, I think, pretty cool, instead of just listening to me. So keep in mind what you just shared for the rest of our hour together. And again, thanks for coming. This is a pause. You coming here for an hour to learn about something and take time out of your day. I know you could be a million other places, so congratulations, you're on your first pause. So here's what we'll cover today. And like Eric said, we'll have some questions, but we'll actually do a couple demos and go into what different types of pauses exist out there and the types of signs that actually exist that might be the things you're already experiencing today or are going to be part of how you can pick up when a pause is important and helpful to do. And we'll also talk about courage and really looking at why it takes so much courage to pause. It's actually quite a effort to go into the unknown, especially if it's a long extended pause and you don't know what's going to happen at the end of it. So a lot of that is, I think, important to recognize. So pausing to me is a state of being, and you learned a little bit about my story. I'm going to share more about it, but basically there's the statistic here I'm going to read. More than half of Americans feel overworked or overwhelmed at least some of the time, and 70% say they often dream of having a different job. And that's from a Families and Work Institute study. So who can relate to that? So like two-thirds of the room raises their hand. Yeah. And so the idea is that we're all in this mentality of always being on, and yet we feel stressed and overwhelmed, and sometimes that's just not serving us. That's not helpful. So how can we change it? And this, like this woman on the slide, we can feel like our hair is gonna, we're like pulling out our roots of our hair because we're just so frazzled. And I believe, based on what I've experienced plus what I'm studying now, pausing is a really key part to how to change that. And so what is a pause? So I call a pause any intentional shift in behavior. Any intentional shift in behavior. So what is a pause? Great. Yeah, so this is a long break. It can be, like I took a 3-month unpaid break, but then it can also be literally exchanging and engaging like we just did and understanding why your motives are to be here for today. So there's a lot of different things in the spectrum of pausing, I'd say, cover that. And I think I can start with how I learned about this through my story. So I'm going to take you on a little bit of a journey. So 6 years ago, I was working at Google right here in San Francisco, 2 blocks away. I was a manager of a support team. And for whatever reason, things were not going good. I was working a lot. So first of all, I was just working like on the weekends, working at night. I felt like this need to continually be engaged at work. And I was getting feedback from my manager that my performance wasn't up to par. And my communication skills weren't something that were really needed or at the level they needed to be. My executive presence wasn't sufficient enough. And so what would happen is I would get this type of feedback, and it was kind of like gradual. It wasn't all at once, but every couple weeks, every day, every time I had a one-on-one with her, there'd be like something that she'd share. And she had good intentions for me. She wanted me to succeed. What was going on in my brain was this monkey mind, this negative tailspin of thoughts. So who can relate to that? Has anyone ever been there? Yeah, like every hand goes up in the room. Right, so my head, what was going on outside of this was Rachel's brain was saying, oh, there you go again. Can't do anything right. You are a failure. Why are you even at Google? why are you here? Why, maybe this job is just like they obviously don't know your talents. You could like go somewhere else, and everyone would appreciate you. Yeah, she clearly doesn't know what she's talking about, but maybe this just isn't for me, and so on and so forth. So my mind would get into this mode, and tailspin, meaning the negative thoughts would just feed on each other, and there wasn't room, literally, for anything else. And it just exacerbated the problem. And so what happened was, you know, I would hear this feedback, be berated, feeling down and out. And then finally, instead of quitting, because that was really where I was, I felt like I couldn't continue to be on this path. It just really wasn't working. And my head was in this space of not really being helpful. I decided to take a 3-month unpaid break. And Google was one of the 14% of companies globally that offer unpaid or paid leaves of absence. So I knew this was a big privilege and a luxury. And so I made my case and I ended up getting approval, which was great. And I took this 3-month unpaid break, which was really the beginning, I would say, of me learning how to be more present with myself and kind of unpacking all the things that were going on, because I wasn't sure exactly what I needed to change or where I needed to go. But clearly this wasn't the path. Like, clearly my world wasn't really aligning with making me feel good at the time. And so that's kind of the mind space that I was in. And I took this 3-month unpaid break. I decided not to travel. I didn't plan a lot. And it was partially because my head, the space I was in, was not equipped to really take on anything else. I was just knowing that I needed some time, like a timeout. I gave myself a timeout. So I ended up going back to Google, but what ended up happening during these 3 months was I really took a look at myself to just take on a curious question about myself and say, what do I want? And I don't know if this is the path, or I don't know if there's another path for me, but I owe it to myself to look into this. And that was kind of like the headspace that I was in. I didn't know if I would be in tech. I thought about ideas like, maybe I'm meant to be a bike tour guide. Maybe I'm meant to just do something completely different than this. I just didn't know. And that was kind of the fear of the unknown. And I didn't have a plan, but all I knew was there was something else that I needed to research and look into, but I couldn't do it in the space I was in while looking for a job. I didn't want to look for a new job because my head was so frazzled. I thought there was no way I was even going to see clearly. And that was kind of cool because I knew that in advance, but I didn't know anything else. That was it. That was the limit of what I knew. And so that was what my first introduction to the pause was. And then I also looked at my strengths. So has anyone here taken the Strength Finder assessment, like Tom Ratha? Yeah, there's a bunch of them out there. And so I took that and looked at my 5 strengths, and it's a great online report. If anyone is interested, it's a $20 fee and you get the whole printout of what your strengths are. But there's actually research now that says if you are working in a world in your job where your strengths are brought to fruition, you're happier, you're finding more meaning, and you're actually you're likely to have higher performance. And that makes sense, right? From our own strengths, if we're actually playing to those, then we're able to be more in alignment and succeed. And then the other thing that I did was I would ask people, individuals who I knew, whether it was through work or socially, what they thought I was good at. And I didn't know this at the time, but I actually wanted some affirmation. And also, I didn't know anymore because I felt like I was good at technology, but now all of a sudden I was getting this feedback that I wasn't that great at it. And so I just took this as a whole opportunity to stay curious about myself and dig in. So that's kind of my story of pausing and returning to Google, which I'm now in sales, by the way. So I did change based on those strengths that I found. But I ask all of us I ask you to think about this question in terms of pausing and knowing it's an intentional shift in behavior. And what is the price that you pay, that all of us pay, if we're not pausing? And how can pausing best serve you? It can make you feel more happy or satisfied. But the idea is that I think pausing works for all of us, for everyone, whether you're in this room or you're out there like thinking about what else to do. But you can decide how to do that. And I believe it's not tied to time, money, or activity. It's really about what works. And we're going to go over a couple of those today. And the other cool part, I think, is pausing is a choice. So just like you chose to be here today, this is an interesting statistic as well. 72% of executives wouldn't take vacation days, even if they were unlimited. However, about 4 in 10 or almost 40% think output would actually increase if employees took more time off. And this is from a survey from the Creative Staffing Group. And so I think the idea is we're so wired and normally on autopilot, and that's how we live. That's kind of what humans do. We aren't conscious a lot of the time in terms of like, what am I doing this moment? And our breathing isn't conscious either, right? Like our body's doing this automatically. When we think about your choices that you have every day, I think pausing is a really good option for being more in touch with what matters to you. Just like I took this long break, but it really doesn't have to be a long break. The other interesting part is we live in this world, and I call is a pause paradox. So what's a pause paradox? So the idea is that, you know, we're in this world always on, we're 24/7, especially here in the Bay Area, a lot of us working a lot. The idea is that we think we need to be always on and answer those emails or check our inboxes or, you know, respond to Twitter or whatever it is. And the reality is, just like I had the always on negative mindset, that isn't sustainable. That isn't sustainable. So the idea is it's actually counterintuitive to pause. It's the last thing we think of, right? Especially if you're in that mode of like, oh, I got 100 things on my to-do list and it's Monday and I'm here to talk and like, why am I even here? And what am I going to do next? But the idea is if you actually are pausing, intentional shift in behavior, you're able to kind of lift your head up and notice how you're feeling, checking in with your emotions. You can decide what you really want and what serves you. And that's really key. So this is what I call the pause paradox. We're not slackers. We're not slackers when we pause. In fact, it's the opposite. You're choosing consciously to check in. And again, that's kind of this fear of the unknown and important. But we're so used to being on autopilot and we're so used to thinking about what do I got to do next? And in that task mode, we just lose sight of it. And if you were like me, when you continue to do that, it leads to burnout, it leads to being overwhelmed or stressed out, and then nobody's happy. So who can relate to that? Like someone, we've either all been there or we know someone there, and it's just it's like how our worlds are. So the fact again is that always on isn't working. And this is an interesting quote I like to talk about from psychological science. By distancing yourself from a challenge and taking the perspective of an observer, you can enhance your reasoning, leading to insights and new solutions that hadn't occurred to you before. And so this is really key. What this is telling us is when we're actually pausing, whether it's a breath or putting our phone away for 2 hours, deciding not to check, taking the choice to not check social media, we are deciding to be more engaged and we can be more satisfied. And creativity is more accessible. And all of that is really important when we are thinking about our own well-being and being really satisfied and not being burned out and overwhelmed. And the other thing is that pausing is in service to the doing, right? It's not like you can always do one or the other. It's great to have a balance, but to be in that sustained state and want to thrive and knowing that you can be at your best and your A game and bringing all of that requires some intentional shifts in behavior. And the important thing is to remember that and to key in to know you can choose to do that. And it's about the priorities and setting those and then even having an integrated practice daily, and we'll talk about that too, so that it's not just like this one thing far out and you do a retreat every year. And that's great. I'm all for retreats. But what if I did this daily? What if I journaled? Do we have any journalers in here? I've been journaling since the second grade. I have like boxes of journals somewhere in a basement. But journaling has actually been proven. If you journal, there was a study done for 2 minutes every day about an emotional event. There was actually the results were that there was better well-being and you felt a better emotional state, like you were happier. So that was a pretty amazing stat for 2 minutes for, I believe it was a 4-week study, over 4 weeks. So how will pausing help all of us as leaders? And leaders, in this term, I think we're all leading our lives. My mentor, Bob Bright, talks about leading is the ability to influence. So when you think about it, we're all leading, whether your title says that or you're not even working. It's like we're just leaders in our lives, families, relationships, and ourselves. And when you are pausing, there's this concept of emotional intelligence, and I'm sure most of us have heard about Daniel Goleman's book from 1996. He just came out with a new book, Altered Traits, with Richie Davidson. This is actually based on research from Savoy and Mayer. So they actually came up with this, and then Daniel Goleman put it out there into his own words. But the idea is that there's five key components of emotional intelligence. And my link here is that pausing helps you develop and strengthen these skills, because it is a skill for emotional intelligence, or EQ as we say. And self-awareness is the foundation of that, right? So like how, I need a pause. That's self-awareness. I know I need 2 minutes right now to just gather myself or I need to not sleep with my phone in my room. Like that's being self-aware. Naming a feeling. There's actually five primary feelings: fear, hurt, joy, sadness, and anger. And again, that's from my work at the Wright Foundation. Fear, hurt, joy, sadness, anger. And so if I can just name what I'm feeling, that's emotional intelligence and self-awareness. And then there's everything else that builds on that. Managing and regulating your emotions, the ability to have more empathy, so putting yourself in someone else's shoes. Motivation, social skills, and leadership. And all of this are the five components of emotional intelligence. Pausing also helps us tune in and align versus knee-jerk reactions. So who here is a pro knee-jerker? Like I do it all the time. It's just how we are. It's like our brains are wired, and when we're in our emotional limbic brains, we have quick decisions. It's a really rapid response. So actually to pause takes that conscious effort, and then you can actually choose differently. Like, oh, maybe I want to think about this differently. Maybe I want to do something else. Engage in your own satisfaction, avoiding that burnout, and then satisfying what I call yearnings. So what's a yearning? This is an old English term. Yearnings actually are something that I study at the Wright Foundation, and this is the work of Judith Wright, where these are our deeper hungers, our universal hungers as humans that we really all have. Does that make sense? So some of them are listed up here, but the idea is to kind of check in, and you could ask yourself what you're yearning for in any given moment. And they change all the time, but you might have some that you notice more than others. So to matter, and actually let's all do this. Just close your eyes as you're sitting down and close your eyes. And as I read these, so notice which ones really resonate for you and if you're feeling them. Like, I yearn to matter, to love and be loved. I yearn to be seen. I yearn to contribute. I yearn to connect. I yearn to belong. I yearn to achieve mastery. I yearn to feel affirmed. And I yearn to connect with a higher power. I yearn to make a difference. And go ahead and open your eyes. So maybe one or two of those stood out to you and you just kind of really felt it in your bones. Did anyone identify with one of these up here? Or maybe more? Yeah, so the idea is that yearnings guide us. And pausing, I think, is a really good way and good start to just say, hey, what am I yearning for right now? Instead of overriding, going on autopilot, thinking this is what I need to do and what I've always done, what am I yearning for right now? And when we move towards those yearnings, when we take action and choose to pause or maybe really set an intention to know I want to make a difference, then I can feel more fulfilled and I can feel more satisfied. And isn't that the whole reason why we're here? Right? So to me, pausing was my gateway to doing this type of this type of work. And I think it's a great way to continue to tune in daily. And like I said, yearnings change thousands of times a day, all the time, moment by moment. So it's about knowing how you feel. And I think it's just a great way to check in if you're pausing. So pausing, like I mentioned, I took an extended break, but there's 5 signs that I wrote about in the book, Pause, that you need a pause. And the first one, and these all happened to me, and I think this is a fun way to summarize it. And so also, like, give yourself a point, like a point of one, if you've got any of these up there. And the first one is you used to love your job and now you loathe it. And who can relate to this one? Like, I had this one a lot. So I was all excited. Even when I was getting that feedback, I'd come into work, like, I'm going to change today. It's going to be different. And then not different. And I was like, oh, this is awful. Like, I don't want to be here. The second one is your boss tells you it's not working out. Well, this happened too. And my boss actually told me it's not a good fit. This isn't a good fit for you. And at the time I was pretty surprised, but also was like, maybe this is a sign. Like, it was interesting, but it could be also something that's indirect. You know, you could hear something, or you're walking down the hallway and maybe a friend asks you, like, are you really happy here? It seems like you're not interested, or maybe you need some more looking into career or work, like coaching or anything like that. You need a technology intervention is 3. And so this one we're going to talk about in our types of pauses, but I was tethered to my email and I was working when I would be at cocktail parties and 2 feet away, I'd be like thumbing up on my BlackBerry at the time or whatever it was. And I got, clearly I needed an intervention. It can be yourself doing the intervention, like, wow, what's going on with me? I don't know why I'm continuing to be tethered to this inbox or social media or whatever it is. And so there's ways you can pause, and it's called the digital device pause. And then the last two, a challenge comes up, an opportunity arises. I think these are kind of these bigger moments in life events that are great ways to pause. So instead of for a challenge, if you got laid off or have an adverse issue to deal with, then it's not about muscling through it and pretending it's not there. That's not going to serve anybody. You're not long-term going to be probably happy about that, and something will show up that maybe that won't, you know, be helpful. So instead, it's an opportunity to pause and maybe think about it more, or journal on it, or just ask yourself, what am I yearning for? And then opportunity could be things like a passion project or a trip you've always wanted to take, things that you feel like this calling for and you've been like having this itch to scratch, but for whatever reason, it's not happening. And so that's a pause too. Maybe I need to think about this and assess what would be the options. What if I did do this? So how many signs do we have? So let's take a little poll here. Who had more than one? Keep your hands up. More than one, yeah, so I, like, there was 5, so if you had 5, who had more than 2? Who had more than 3? 4? 5? So the idea is if you have more than 2, it's pretty much an opportunity to pause. And even if you have 1, it's still a good pause. So we're going to talk about these daily pauses, and the idea is you can pick one of these and continue to do it. My idea was you could do it by the end of the day, by bedtime tonight again, if you're interested. And I'm curious, who here has a mindful practice or a meditation practice or anything they do? Oh, okay, great. So maybe at least half of the room there. So you're probably already familiar with this one, but I think the belly breath pause is a really powerful one, and we can do this one together. The idea is this can take a minute or a breath or 2 breaths, and so everybody go ahead and just take one hand and sit up in your chair straight, and maybe just your both feet on the ground and place your hand on your diaphragm. Go ahead and just take a breath. You can close your eyes if you like. You can laugh. It's all good. And exhale. And allow your belly breath to guide your mind. And just open your eyes. If they were closed, take off your hand. We probably all felt that shift. I know I did. So that's a belly breath pause. That took what? Well, we did a couple breaths there, but it could be 1 breath. And again, it's the choice. You can choose to tune in anytime.
You are listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Listen to thousands of our podcasts on iTunes or Google Play. And when you're in the Bay Area, please join us live for one of our 450 programs each year. You can find us online at commonwealthclub.org. And now, back to our program.
There's another one that is called micropausing, and this is from Dr. David King Keller, and he's one of my heroes because he wrote a PhD on pausing, which is, like, awesome. So he has what is called micropausing, where you can literally, for six breaths, decrease your cortisol levels, which is your stress hormone in your brain, and switch into the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the way you can be more relaxed. But one of the ones he has is actually called the single hand pause. So go ahead and put one hand up about 6 inches away from your face and notice the texture and look at it. Focus on your hand. And then on your next breath, exhale and blow on your hand through your mouth. And put your hand down. So what Dr. Keller talks about that is the actual feeling the breath on your hand takes the attention away from your amygdala, the limbic system in your brain, and involves and actually invokes your prefrontal cortex, your thinking center. So you're taken out of your stress zone and emotional center from that. Who knew? Right? I love that one. And he has a few other ones in the book that are pretty cool. The other one I think is really important, especially here in the Bay Area, is the digital device pause. And there's all kinds of research out there now where the quote I have here is when we check our devices, the neurotransmitter dopamine gets released, which helps control the brain's reward and pleasure centers. We feel good as this physiological response to dopamine in our brain's pleasure center lights up. So what does that mean? So basically, when we're checking our phones or scrolling through our Instagrams and all of that, our brains are getting these reward signals, and it's like a lure. It's incentive to stay hooked into it. So we're simply rewarding ourselves. So it's actually this catch-22. So the more we scroll, the more we want to scroll. Does that make sense? So know this. Like, this is what's going on the neurological level. So the idea is to pause this, and you won't feel that draw. But that's what everyone's feeling. It's not like you're the only person out there doing this. Like, this is a neurological wiring that we all have. So I'm a big fan of creating some rules for yourself around pausing. And the idea could be you don't check your phone after 3 p.m. on a weekend, or you don't check it on the weekend. Sleep with it on outside of your room, like I said. You can also limit your social media exposure for set blocks of time and have device-free zones. It might be the bedroom. It might be a time of day. All of those are helpful. And then always you can put them away at meals or decide to not have them. And just avoiding that temptation to not have it in your bedroom when you sleep. And I know this is my weakness. I know I like love being on my phone. So I'm always working on this. You know, I wrote a book about pausing. This is still my work. Like, this is still happening. And hopefully you can choose what works for you. Again, it's about what matters for you and what works. Who here, I'm just curious, like who here thinks that they could use a little less time on their devices? Whether it's Netflix. Netflix is a device on your streaming services, like iPhones, iPads, all that stuff. Yeah, so this is something we can consciously choose to change. But again, on autopilot, we won't do it. I think expressing gratitude is a great way to pause as well. And there's actually research out here in the meditation studies that when we're giving and expressing gratitude, we are lowering our cortisol levels and we're feeling more relaxed, and our brains are essentially changing our those neurotransmitters again, and we're feeling more happy and more meaning in our lives. So my challenge is to express gratitude for at least one thing today, and you could build that list up. It's a great practice. You could start a journal, and I think the good, the bad, and the ugly is a good way to start. So giving thanks to the ugly in your life is not easy. But how does it serve you? And be curious about that. So those are kind of some examples of the types of pauses, but 1 minute is really, I think, all it takes, and it could be around the block, going outside, going to a talk. All of those are great intentions, and the idea is when you choose to be more rooted in what works for you and, again, satisfy your yearnings, then we are all a little more happier. We're all a little more satisfied, and it's very helpful driving towards what works for you. All right, we're going to do another exercise. So with a new buddy, go ahead and we're going to do just a minute. So 30 seconds, 30 seconds. What struck you the most on these pauses or anything you've heard till up through today? And what are the implications in your life? What is the long-term influence it could have? So we've talked a lot about the types of pauses. Hopefully you have some ideas for what you could do to implement and create something that works for you. And the other idea, too, is there's just all this research of benefits. So we talked a lot about it. I think the bottom line that I like that was summed up really well by Psychology Today says the benefits of returning refreshed after pausing are worth the time away and often lead to greater creativity and less stress, right? I talked about that already. But when we're in that mindset of tasks and focus, we just don't even see it. And our brains aren't designed to do anything unless I'm in the task mode, not thinking about anything else, negative tailspin, or just do. And I just miss this idea of creativity if I'm in that mode a lot. And our brains do one or the other. It's a binary thing. So just remember that the next time you're in a task mode or getting through your to-do list, because it's all about doing. I want to be successful, and I'm definitely not saying don't do all of that. Do more and use pausing to help in service to the doing so that you can feel refreshed, you can feel renewed, you can check in and thrive. And I think this all kind of is wrapped up in what I want all of us to take away today, which is to create your own pause plan. And so if you've got a piece of paper, great. If not, this is something that you can do later. But one idea is to write down some quick thoughts in your own situation. So everybody think of just one way that you, something in your life going on right now that you'd want to, it's a doing thing and you'd want to create pausing around it. And think about what's happening, what maybe a challenge is, that's a great way to start, or an action that you'd want to take about it. It could be a relationship, it could be family, it could be a work situation. And then set an intention. So what would you want, right? What would you want to get out of it? I want to have a deeper connection with this person. I want to be seen, which is a yearning. I want to explain what's really happening at work to my manager. Whatever's going on for you. And then plot out just a couple jotted notes. It doesn't have to be detailed information. What time frame would work for you? And again, I don't believe pausing is tied to time, money, or activity. But no, you know, could you do a belly breath pause and actually have a chance to go back in and engage or deal with a challenge? That's the idea. And the idea is you may not know how to spend the time. Maybe it's a weekend. I'm a big fan of integrating maybe an hour or 2 hours a day on the weekend for my own intentional time. What do I want to get out of this weekend, or what do I want to learn more about or focus on? And that's a pause to me. It's also maybe out of my comfort zone or something I wouldn't normally do. And so the idea is you don't have to have all the details. I don't think that's the power of pausing. Pausing is about the unknown and like learning about what comes up emerges out of that space that you've created, right? So it's just these couple of main ideas, and the idea would be that it unfolds, and whatever will be there is there, and you've created that space for it to emerge. So that is the pause plan that I think everyone can quickly do, and I have a lot more details in the book about it, but I think that's a good start. And then I think in summary, I think pausing is for everyone. I really can't state that enough. And again, it builds our emotional intelligence, our skills to be more present in the world. And I think that was my biggest lesson in that 3-month break that I had. I mean, my My whole 3 months, I learned what I learned the most, and the biggest lesson to me was that I learned to be more present. And I really got a lot out of that because I didn't know how to be present before, really. And it can start it can start immediately. And it's also a pause is a courage act. And the idea is that it's something that is and goes beyond the norm. Right, we're living in this pause paradox, and there's another statistic that Bob Wright quotes, and that 70% of the world lives in conformity. We know this, so it takes conscious choice to do what you would like to do, and wouldn't that be a good place if we all went around being more satisfied and not having to blame other people or point fingers? And like, it's about that conscious choice and taking risks. So that pretty much was what I wanted to share today. And there's a couple of things just before we take questions. But I think I sent around that sheet. So if you want to sign up for more information, there's that. And you can also note if you want coaching. I do free coaching sessions for anyone interested. And then we have some free gifts. Love free gifts. Yay. So if you go to my website, rachelomera.com/CW Club, you can write that down. There's a couple... I do a podcast, so it's not a podcast, it's a podcast, and I have guests on, and I have one from Agape Stastanopoulos on there, and Sharon Salzberg, and they're wonderful women who have learned the mastery of pausing, in my opinion, and so there's those recordings, and then also you can get the first two chapters of Pause free on my site, and download those as well, or the book is here, and I'm going to be signing books after. So with that, we'll move into questions.
Hi. You had spoken about 70% of people conforming. Can you elaborate on what that means?
I can. Yeah. So this is a statistic. It's in the book as well from, I want to say it's like D.W. Durst. So it's a research that came out a while ago from the Chicago area. The idea is that we as a society and culture, like we're a group and we like tribes and we do things other people do, right? As humans, we want to go to the restaurant that we heard about because it's good. And there's actually studies, psychology studies, that we have conformity happening at a really base level where there might be people in a room and they say, you know, like, I agree with this guy, or this stick is longer. There's like different length sticks, and the stick is clearly shorter. And everyone is in an experiment, but there's one person who actually is the subject of the test. And after 4 or 5 times, he actually thinks the shorter stick is longer than the ones that are longer. And it's fascinating. So there's that kind of thing. And then it's also the idea of not being truthful and expressing fully. So how many times have you gone along with someone because you didn't want to rock the boat? I know I do this a lot. So that's the text, the context of it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Good question.
I recently read a happiness study. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it said that it actually encouraged people to take more often shorter vacations. So just a day tacked onto a weekend, for example, or something like that, mm-hmm. because a lot of the stress that comes from actually vacation is like when you get back catching up on all your emails, if you were out for 2 or 3 weeks and, you know, stuff like that. But for me, it's tough because if I just tack on a day to a weekend, sometimes I don't feel like I actually got the vacation, you know, like you feel like you're just back to work. So like, even if I go on a 2 week vacation, it takes like the first week to actually decompress sometimes. And so I'm just curious to think, there's so many, mm-hmm. there's obviously two mindsets there, but so many different opinions on this matter. And what are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, who can relate to that? You tag a day on and you're like, great, I got another day. And next thing you know, you got to go back. It's Sunday, Monday night, and like Tuesday's right there, or vice versa, you know, Friday. So yeah, I think it's a great effort and can work. And it's, and the idea is, I think it's about what works for individuals, right? So if you know you need that 2 week break and need to be really removed from work, then do that. And it will require taking the time and vacation and saving that up. But maybe you could do it in 1 week and they could challenge yourself and say that. I mean, it'll be an experiment, and I think experimenting is a way to think about all of this too. So imagine every pause is an experiment, and you can decide, does this one work? Yeah, I didn't really feel that belly breath pause. It's like, screw that. I don't want that one. The other idea is to bring your growth mindset or beginner's mind to any pause. And so, you know, that kind of shut down of like, yeah, this doesn't work, right there is a thought that isn't necessarily growth or beginner mindset, right? So it's going to be about what works for you. And I don't have any right answers because it's going to depend on things like vacation time or maybe obligations with family. If you've got kids, you don't want to take another day, or you actually want time to yourself, but you need to be with your kids. Like, all of these things are factors. And so I encourage and invite you to just try out different things. And it's also about maximizing the time that you have. So even if it's a Sunday or a Saturday and it's not an extra day, what would you say would really work for you? And again, it's being out of conformity. So if you're always in a routine of doing something, the nonconformist would say, like, if I actually took 1 hour and went for a hike in Marin or, you know, whatever it would be, what would that be like? And so trying new things out. And maybe that's completely refreshing and different than anything you'd tried. But you wouldn't have known it unless you tried it. And I think we have a misconception that we need a lot of time. Sure, I need a lot of time. Like, time is great, but that's just not a reality, right? We talked about how we're always on. So what can I do with the time that I have, I think, is the better question, and to just consider the options and go from there. Yeah. Yes. Hi.
Hello. I've enjoyed your talk because it feels like it's very pragmatic. But not all of us get to work for a place like Google where they might be more open. So I was wondering, you know, you come back from your break, and let's say you had a reputation of X, and you want to sort of shift people's beliefs around you, and how do you help people get enrolled into your vision of yourself and your journey that you're on?
Yeah. So this is a great way to think about your communication plan. And I have a whole chapter in integrating, I call it reentry post-pause. And I think it's really important to be authentic. So what that means to me is speaking my truth and really being vulnerable. What does it mean to me? And so, for example, I had a lot of practice with this. So I'd be 1 month away from coming back to Google, and I knew I was going back. But I think this could be any time. Like, maybe you're at work now and you're thinking about changing jobs, or you're interviewing for jobs, or you were laid off. The idea is to not pretend you're not considering pausing or changing, but to be truthful and express fully and always bring it back to you. So in my case, I would say, well, I actually just took 3 months of unpaid break at Google. So I was like pragmatic, factual. But then I said, like, I never knew I was going to do this. And it was actually because I wasn't doing well at work and I didn't know what to do. And then I would just kind of pause and let someone respond. And that was always an interesting conversation. People wanted to know more, or they said, I wish I could do that. And I could say, well, you can actually do that. Like, you don't have to quit your job. You can be journaling daily. And so again, it comes back to that choice. But I think being open and vulnerable is the way that you allow others to be vulnerable too. So you lead it, you start, and then you give permission to that other person to be vulnerable. And now you have the secret formula, so you can all have really deep conversations and engagements with others. But that's how I would say it. And it could be for any situation. You don't have to have a long break. But that to me is the key, I think, to really helping communicate what was happening to me. And that just made me more present. It made me feel more connected to someone. And this was before any of that work that I'm doing now, like as I study emotional intelligence, none of that was going on at the time. Did that answer your question? Okay, cool. Hello.
Hi. I think, you know, it's like I'm pretty much sold on the value of pause. I actually was telling my partner during the second exercise about an experience I had 30 years ago where I'd had like a really stressful day at work. And so the next day I called in sick and went hiking and felt a lot more productive when I came back the following day. I think if anybody at work had known that I was out hiking, I might have gotten fired. Unfortunately, the culture in most CPA firms is very different from the culture at Google, and I think you're very lucky to be in that situation. Fortunately, I'm now self-employed, so I don't have that problem. But for people who are stuck in jobs like that, how do you persuade your boss about the value of a pause?
Yeah. Oh, that's really – thank you for sharing. It's a good question. And I think we're all going to reach our limits for what is doable and not doable in our own situations. So I think, again, it's about what works for you. So if you're at a investment banking firm and everyone's working 80 hours, which I lived in New York for 10 years, like this was everyone I knew, it would be really challenging to say I'm going to take off work for a hike. Like that just doesn't work. So the idea is what works and what is it, what works for you and about the quality of time. So probably taking a whole day off isn't going to work. It's not reality. And so that means you've got a Saturday and a Sunday, maybe the evenings, but you're probably too spent to do anything. So intentionally strategizing, taking in 30 minutes and say, I'm going to think about what would work for me. And what are you yearning for? Always bring it back to that. Maybe you want to yearn to feel alive and you go out and hike. Maybe you want to learn, maybe you're yearning to connect. And so tapping into that is a huge data bank for you. All of us, because that's what's going on a subconscious level where we're just wanting to engage more. So whatever time you've got, again, it's tied to quality of time. It's not quantity of time. I encourage you to try that. And who's to say you could have waited? Like an option would be maybe I have to wait 2 days to Saturday and I'm going to go for a 3-hour hike. And no, I don't have to work on Saturday. I'm not going to do any work. I'm going to do it Sunday if I have to, or I'm going to just actually wait till Monday. Or whatever it is. So, yeah, I think it's about knowing your boundaries and then what's working within that and giving yourself permission to do that too. Because it's a skill. We aren't used to doing that for ourselves. Hello.
Hello. As someone who lived through the pause that Rachel took, I just want to say I'm so proud of you and so impressed to see what you've done with not just writing the book, but changing your life and going around and doing this.
Oh, so, thank you.
I love Rachel.
Liz is my photographer for the day. Thank you very much. Well, it's interesting because there's people who knew me post-pause or now and then pre-pause, and I do feel like a new person. I feel like it's changed how I live. That's why I wrote the book. It was because it helped me learn I didn't have to live in a certain way, and I wanted other people. I thought I couldn't be the only person in the world who is like burned out and tried some things and then now know how to live in a way that serves me more. And I wanted to share that, and that's what the book is. So thank you. Hi. Hello.
I'm curious about the concept of taking a pause, not from an event or work, but within. Like in very stressful board meetings when you can't exactly blow on your hand. Can you talk about how to do that?
Yeah, you can't really just go. You could. And actually, on that note, and I'll answer that in a moment. So I lead a 2-minute pause on my West Coast sales team meetings every week. It was every other week, and now it's every week. But it was my idea. I chose to bring it in. I was scared to death. Like, these guys are going to think I'm nuts. And we now do it, and it's like the best part of the meeting. And now I'm actually transitioning to a new team, and they're all like, what are we going to do without the 2-minute pause? And it's created a culture for it. So I would say bring this into workplaces for whatever feels good. And again, it's outside of comfort zones too. It's taking risks to pause, but you are the agents of change. If you came to this talk, you are here to learn and grow, and we are transforming, and this is our role to bring it out into the world. So when you are in a situation and you can't necessarily, you know, sit there all zen, there are things you can do while you are breathing. Like you could feel your feet on the ground, feel your butt in the chair, sit up straighter. You could also make eye contact with people and notice maybe how you feel, because that's what we have these bodies. A lot of times we're in our heads, but when we actually choose to be in our bodies, we have a lot more data, and we can recognize that. Even taking them into the sensory, noticing the colors, like blue. Okay, the clock. What is the texture of this wall? We're in our sensory perception in our brains, which helps us be present. And when we're thinking about future or past, or thinking about what I got to get done, we're in our cognitive minds, and we're not present. And so being present to me is a key for this, and pausing helps us get there. So it's like it can work either way, but I think it's about what can work in within the situation. I think belly breath pausing is good, taking 3 deep breaths, feeling my feet on the ground, sitting up straight, and just noticing how I am in the moment, or even being the voice, like the non-critical observer, to say like, oh, I notice I really want to check out right now. I notice I really want to beat this guy's head into the wall because I'm so annoyed. Great. Well, that's data for you. You know, like that's a pause. All right. I think we're at any other questions out there?
I'll ask one. If I were to take a month off, how do you recommend people structure 1 or 2 months if they're going to take that whole extended period of time so they don't end up at the end of the time and it's like, oh, I didn't do anything with it.
Right. And if you have that opportunity to take even a month off, that's amazing. And even if it's a week, like, again, it's about the intention. So I actually write a lot about this in the book, and I have an article that I'm editing right now for the Harvard Business Review about how to ask for personal growth time off. So the idea is that you want to integrate into the world you're going into after your pause, whether it's a month or a week or a day, with that pause mindset we talked about. And so I think one of the best ways to do that is to imagine yourself in that situation at work and knowing, like, this is the mindset I want to be in. This is my calm, relaxed state, and like checking in to feel that, I think, is really important. And then you can bring that back into that work situation. And you don't have to constantly be in it. It's kind of like checking in. So you could pause to check in and say, how am I feeling right now? Fear, joy, hurt, sadness, anger. And what do I, you know, like, this is how I want to feel when I'm back at work. And then when you're out of that, when you're not in alignment with that at work, so you go back, let's say, then what can you do to change it? Could you take a belly breath pause? Could you go out at lunch and not eat at your desk? The idea is to create those instances to create the muscle memory, your experiential self, so that your body can feel that again and not know it's returning to the zone of like not being happy or unsatisfied. Does that make sense?
Well, it sounds as if you're recommending practicing this during that month or 2 months. There was another part of the question, which was just structuring that time. I mean, to say maybe the first 2 weeks I'm going to figure out what I'm going to do, or how have people structured that length of time as a block?
Yeah, so I think that that's a great question, and it goes into the pause plan. So setting an intention is like a big part of this. So what do I want to get out of this time? And that's why the quantity of time isn't actually that important. I think it's a misnomer, and it's great to have the time, but you don't need it. And it's a luxury. So like if you have it, great. But the reality is we just don't have that time a lot of our lives. So create the intention, and might be like day one. I like to do this on flights. So when you're taking off on the runway, you can do this as well. And you're just like, what is my intention when I land? How do I want to show up? That's a pause. You know, that can take 10 seconds in my brain, or maybe I scroll it, write it down, scroll it. Maybe I write it down. I'm not going to scroll it. And so I'll have an idea of that, but it's like setting the intention allows you to vision a little bit where your mind now has a destination. And if you don't do that, how will you, it just doesn't allow you the perimeter to like really stretch and know where you're going. And that's why we all, you know, didn't get into visioning, but talking about that is a great way to think about pausing too. Like, what's your vision? What's my intention? It kind of all goes into that. So that's a big part of the pause plan. And intentional shifts in behavior is a pause in itself. So I think that's what I would say to that. Great.
Okay. Our gratitude to Rachel O'Meara for being with us today. We're also grateful to our audience here, as well as to those listening to the recording. And now, this meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, commemorating its 114th year of enlightened discussion, is adjourned. Yay.